Welcome to The Word for Today, the broadcast ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be following the events surrounding the death of Elisha as we pick up today's lesson in 2 Kings, chapter 13, verse 14. And now, here's Pastor Chuck Smith with today's message.
Joash is still in the picture. He just gives you, you know, he jumps ahead. And why he does, I don't know. But the guy who's writing this jumps ahead and tells you of his death before he tells you of his life. In fact, in this next little vignette here, we have him visiting Elisha as Elisha was dying. Now, Elisha, this mighty prophet of God, was fallen sick of the sickness whereof he died. In spite of his tremendous faith, in spite of the many miracles that were wrought through his life, the dead brought back to life, lepers cleansed, miracle after miracle attended this man's life, yet he fell sick of the sickness whereof he died. You can have all of the positive confessions in the world and still die of your sickness. So Elisha fell sick of the sickness whereof he died. Joash, the king of Israel, came down to him, and he wept over his face. He leaned over him crying so that his tears dropped on Elisha's face. And he said, "Oh, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof." A statement in which he recognized that in this man is the real strength of the nation. This man living in a relationship with God represents the strength of the nation. For a nation's strength is always related to that nation's relationship to God. And when a nation is living in a right relationship with God, that nation is strong. Righteousness exalts a nation. And the king, though he was an evil man, though he was a sinful man, still recognized herein is the strength, the chariot of Israel, the horsemen thereof. There is the strength, the power of the nation, and it's represented in this man who is now dying. And he realizes that though when Elijah died, Elisha was there to fill in, there's no one that is to take Elisha's place. There's no prophet waiting in line to catch the mantle for continued strength. And thus he realizes that the strength of the nation is going with this man. And he's concerned, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. As he realizes the strength lies in the relationship with God. So Elisha said unto him, "Take your bow and your arrows." And he took unto him the bow and the arrows. And he said to the king of Israel, "Put your hand upon the bow." And he put his hand on the bow. And the Elisha put his hands upon the king's hand. And then he said, "Open the window toward the east," the area that had already been conquered by Syria. And he opened the window. Then Elisha said, "Shoot." And he shot. And Elisha said, "The arrow of the Lord's deliverance and the arrow of deliverance from Syria. For you shall smite the Syrians in Aphek till you have consumed them." And then he said, "Take your arrows." And he took them and he said unto the king of Israel, "Smite upon the ground." And he smote thrice and stayed. Now, there's a difference here, not a really discrepancy. We don't really know what this entails. There are some of the scholars that translate and say that what he did was say, "Shoot your arrows now into the ground, out the window into the ground." And others that just smite them on the ground. In other words, take them and just smite them, you know, with your handful of the arrows smiting them on the ground. So whether or not it was this way or this way, let the theologians argue about it. What difference does it make? whatever it was, he only did it three times. And Elisha was angry with him. And he said, you should have smitten five or six times. Then you would have smitten Syria till you had consumed it. Whereas now, you will only smite them but three times. So the smiting was symbolic of God, the arrow of deliverance. Now you take the arrows and smite with them. And it was symbolic of God's smiting the Syrians. And he should have just kept smiting. But half-hearted, nonchalant, boom, boom, boom. So what, you know. And thus the prophet was angry because it symbolized the fact that he would not really destroy or have complete victory, but only a partial victory over the enemy. Half-hearted commitment never makes it. There are so many people that take sort of a nonchalant type of an attitude towards the things of the Lord. They don't make that full commitment to win. Takes total dedication and total commitment to the Lord. To utterly defeat the enemy takes a total commitment of your life to the things of the Lord. If you take sort of a easy come, easy go, or sort of a casual attitude towards the things of the Spirit, oh, when I can, I make it around, you know, and when I get an opportunity, yeah, I'll be glad to do it, you know, and you take just sort of that casual, carefree attitude, you'll never know what it is to live in total victory. You've got to be aggressive in this battle against the enemy. Now, Elisha died, and they buried him. And the bands of the Moabites invaded the land at the coming in of the year. In the springtime, here came the Moabites again. Every year in the spring, they would have this little raiding party. And so it came to pass as they were burying a man. The funeral procession was going on. They were burying this guy. And they spied this band of Moabites, this unit that was approaching. These guys, of course, burying the guy, they didn't bring their swords and all with them, and they saw this armband coming. So they just threw the guy in the sepulcher of Elisha. It was just the handiest thing. They had no doubt taken the rock off the top of the cave, and here came this band of Moabites, toss him in, you know, let's get out of here. And when the man was let down and touched the bones of Elisha, he revived and stood up on his feet. I mean, that old man Elisha, he was powerful. He had been a prophet for 60 years there in Israel. Such power in this man's life that even after death, when this dead corpse touched his bones, it came back to life. But Hazael, the king of Syria, oppressed Israel all of the days of Jehoahaz. Now, this goes back to Jehoahaz, who was the father of Joash. But the Lord was gracious unto them and had compassion on them and respect unto them because of his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, notice what it says about the Lord. The Lord was gracious unto them. The Lord had compassion on them. The Lord had respect unto them because he had made a covenant with Abraham. So often I hear people say, well, you know, I don't like the God of the Old Testament. He seems so harsh and hard. I like the God of the New Testament as though there were two gods. The God of the Old, the God of the New. Evidently, they haven't read the book of Revelation. Or Romans chapter 1, or even a lot of the things that Christ said concerning the future judgment that's going to come upon the unrighteous. Now, this is Old Testament, and it's talking about God. You see, there are two sides to God's nature. He is a God of love. He is a God of compassion. He is gracious. He is merciful to those that fear him. But to those who rebel against him, then he is a God of justice who will consume the evildoers. He's not soft. He's not a Pollyanna. He's a powerful God bringing vengeance upon the evildoers, but extending his mercy and grace unto 1,000 generations of those who will follow after him. And in both the Old Testament and the New Testament, you see both sides of God's nature. And here, notice he is revealed as being gracious unto them, and surely he was. They weren't serving him. They were serving the idols that they had made, the golden calves. But yet he had compassion on them. He was gracious to them. He had respect to them because he remembered the covenant that he had made with their father Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And he would not destroy them, neither cast them out of his presence yet. Still giving them opportunities to repent. Still giving them opportunities to turn. As God is gracious and compassionate towards you, so long-suffering, giving you the opportunity, know you not that this goodness of God is intended to bring you to repentance, the graciousness of God, giving you opportunity to turn. So Hazael, the king of Syria, died. Ben-Hadad, his son, reigned in his stead. And Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, took again out of the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Hazael, the cities which he had taken out of the hand of Jehoahaz, his father, by war. So during the reign of Hazael, he whipped Jehoahaz. But Jehoahaz's son whipped Hazael's son, Ben-Hadad, and took again the cities that had been taken by his father, or taken from his father through war. And three times did Joash beat him and recovered the cities of Israel. Too bad he didn't smite more. He would have completely destroyed and had victory. And it was during the second year of the reign of Joash in the north, the son of Jehoahaz, that Amaziah, the son of Joash, the king of Judah, began to reign. Now, there's the problem is that there are kings by same names, both in the north and the south, close to each other. The king in the north, Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, and then Amaziah, who was the son of Joash, the king of the south. He was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 29 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jehoaddan of Jerusalem. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, yet not like David his father. He did according to all of the things as Joash his father did. Howbeit, the high places were not taken away, as yet the people did sacrifice and burn incense on the high places. Now, under the law, it was commanded that they should bring their sacrifices unto the place that God would appoint. They weren't to just offer sacrifices unto the Lord anywhere. But it developed that it was sort of an inconvenience to come to Jerusalem to sacrifice. And so they had set these various altars in the high places where they would sacrifice and burn incense unto Jehovah. They weren't worshiping pagan gods. They were worshiping Jehovah, but not in precisely the prescribed way. And thus, it was a sign of weakness and of disobedience that the kings would allow these traditions to remain. This business of establishing other places of worship, high places, began back in the period of Judges. It became deeply ingrained into the traditions. The family would have their own altar and all, and it was hard to root out. Only King Asa did that which was like his father David. And then, of course, later Hezekiah, the high places were removed. But most all the way through, you'll find that he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, yet he didn't remove the high places where the people burnt their sacrifices and offered their incense. And so it was always a sign of a partial, not complete commitment to the Lord. A compromise in spiritual things. But compromises in spiritual things are always a sign of spiritual weakness. When you begin to make compromises. Now, the kingdom, of course, was divided between the northern and the southern, the northern kingdom known as Samaria often, and from whence, of course, you have the Samaritans, which were sort of a mixed breed of people. And you remember that at the time that Jesus was here, that as he went through Samaria, he met the woman of Samaria, who after he had disarmed her, and she realized that he was a prophet and could see right through her mask. She said, "Our fathers say that we are to worship God on this mountain." The high place was Gerizim, where the Samaritans offered their sacrifice, where they have their yearly Passover. "You say Jerusalem." And what she was really asking is, where is the proper place to worship God? And Jesus answered, "Woman, the day is coming, and now is, when they that worship God will neither worship in this mountain nor in Jerusalem. For God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth, and God is seeking such to worship him." But the establishing of the high places, other places to worship God, rather than the place prescribed by God in Jerusalem, the sign of the compromises, it was a sign of spiritual weakness of the king, though they did right in the sight of the Lord, yet not fully after the Lord. There was that compromise that was there. So his father had been assassinated. Joash had been assassinated by his servants. And it came to pass as soon as the kingdom was confirmed in his hand, as soon as he had established himself, that he slew the servants which had slain the king, his father. But the children of the murderers he did not slay, according to that which is written in the book of the law of Moses, wherein the Lord commanded, saying, "The fathers shall not be put to death for the children, nor the children be put to death for the fathers, but every man shall be put to death for his own sin." Now, an interesting thing about verse 6 is that here, Amaziah was following a command that is in the book of Deuteronomy. There were some scholars who had developed a theory that Deuteronomy was written much later in the history of the nation. And it was suggested that the book of Deuteronomy was written during the time that Hezekiah was king, or even periods after that, and these fellows sought to offer all kinds of proofs that the book of Deuteronomy was not a part of the original Pentateuch, not written by Moses, but came along much later. Interesting that here in 2 Kings they should quote from Deuteronomy before it was ever written. Quite an amazing thing indeed. He then fought against the Edomites in the Valley of Salt, and there he killed 10,000 of the Edomites, and he took Selah, which is Petra, by war, And he called the name of it Jocktheel until this day, until the day that the guy was writing. However, later on, it's called Selah again by Isaiah, who lived not too much longer after this. So the fellow who was originally recorded this, up until his day, it was still called Jocktheel, but that name didn't stick, and it went back to the city of Petra.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse study of 2 Kings in our next lesson, as Pastor Chuck Smith continues to guide us through the entire Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD. And phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online, anytime, when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of 2 Kings. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
May the Lord bless you, keep His hand upon you, and guide you through this week. And I pray that God will help you to make a full commitment unto Him, not just a half-hearted, well, you know, and if it all goes well and nothing's in the way, you know, we might. But let's just really, in our hearts, make that kind of total commitment to the Lord. Lord, I'm yours. I will serve you. I will live for you. Lord, I'll follow you in whatever endeavor you might lead me to do your will and to do your work. And may you experience really the presence and the power of the Lord working in your life this week in a very special way.
I've got some exciting news to share with you. The Word for Today is releasing Pastor Chuck and Kay's books in ebook format. For those who like to read books electronically, you can now download Pastor Chuck's books to your Kindle reader, iPad, iPod, or even cell phone. What a blessing to be able to have these resources with you at all times, especially when you're in a place to minister to another person. If you have an e-reader, then you know the advantage of being able to search, find, and minister within seconds. And with all of Pastor Chuck and Kay's insights into biblical wisdom, this is a great opportunity to be able to gain from their books so you can share the good news with others. If you would like more information on how to download Pastor Chuck and Kay's ebooks, you can call the Word for Today customer service department at 1-800-272-WORD or visit us online at thewordfortoday.org.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.